League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
It's time to change the situation if Tottenham wants to change.
It's in the past, it's in the past. And we look forward, buy our football positive. We're wearing Tottenham shirts, we buy the Tottenham white.
And still Ricky Villa! What a fantastic run! He scored!
That's going on, have a crack. He is, you know.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Tottenham Way. I'm Tom Barkley of The Sun and I'm joined by Tom Allnutt of The Times. And let's be honest, it's been quite a slow start to Tottenham's summer so far, with just the one signing through the door in Kota Takai, the Japanese centre-back, after Matisse Tell obviously had his loan turned permanent. And we're still waiting for Spurs to really get going in this transfer window. But we thought we'd talk a little bit about their potential business this summer in this particular episode. Maybe things are starting to ramp up now the PSR deadline of June 30th has passed. Whether that's relevant or not, we'll discuss that as well. And kick into some of the sort of quite eye-catching names that have been mentioned of late. So, Tom, first of all, how are you finding this summer covering Spurs? It has been a bit sort of slow, sort of kind of kicking your heels a little bit, or do you feel like there's, you know, it's all starting to ramp up a little bit now?
Yeah, it's always a bit of a weird time, isn't it, Tom? Like it's, you sort of get to the end of the season, I always think. There's like a little bit of a hill where you get to the finish line. Then there's always like a week or 2 weeks where there's a lot of sort of post-season stuff to be settled. And in this season, it was obviously all the Ange stuff and then Thomas Frank. So you kind of have to keep going for a bit more. And now I guess we're in that kind of like, I mean, I wouldn't really call it a lull because in a way, football never stops. And, you know, the Club World Cup is very much happening and transfers are very much happening. And actually, as a journalist, I don't know how you see it, but it almost feels like it makes more sense these days to kind of take your summer holidays at the start of the Premier League season, weirdly, than it does during the summer transfer window, because sometimes there can be kind of more stuff going on in July than there is in the middle of August. But yeah, I mean, it's been a slow start for Spurs, hasn't it, I guess? And I think we've maybe in the last sort of year or two been pleasantly surprised by how Tottenham have got a few deals done quite early in the summer transfer window. And I imagine fans are slightly sort of, you know, scratching their heads as to why, you know, nothing has been done yet. Nothing in inverted commas, sorry, you know, because obviously they've done a couple of deals, but nothing particularly significant, let's say. And I think also because, you know, you look around at the kind of rival teams, you know, City done a lot already. Liverpool have done, I would say, nearly all their business already. Arsenal, okay, haven't actually confirmed too much yet, but they've really got three or four deals right there, haven't they, with kind of Kepa and Norgaard. We're hearing they're really stepping up their interest in Eze. Even Chelsea, you know, with the Lap. It just feels like the other clubs are all, you know, being active, you know, those kind of six or seven teams in the Premier League. And I guess you could probably say Newcastle and Aston Villa are still sort of also having kind of slightly quieter starts to the window. And perhaps the ones, you know, that we're comparing Spurs to there, it's slightly unfair. You know, you've got perhaps more sort of financial firepower right now, more kudos, you know, when it comes to attracting players. But it's not ideal, is it? It's not ideal. And I think it's fair to say that, you know, it's a new head coach. Frank obviously literally hasn't even really seen the vast majority of the squad yet. You know, he's been in and out of the training ground for the last week or so, doing some meetings, seeing the likes of Maddison and Dragosin who are there doing treatment for injuries. But the non-international players come back later this week. So that'll be people like Solanke, Bergvall, for example. And then next week, we know the internationals are coming back. So really, you know, Frank needs to sort of, I wouldn't say see people in training because, you know, he knows what these players are like. He's, you know, very familiar with what they can do, but I would imagine it's more about face-to-face talks with some of them, you know, and until they have those talks and he really gets a feel for where some players' heads are at, maybe Spurs can't make the big decisions when it comes to the transfers. I don't know. Do you think they Spurs fans should be concerned about the sort of slow pace of to the start of the window, or do you think it's just kind of how it is with Tottenham?
I don't know. I think historically, Spurs are a club that often do their business quite late in windows, although, as you point out, they have made in the recent, not just summer windows, actually, in recent January windows as well. Sometimes they've done business a bit quicker. Maybe this is a bit more of a sort of reverting to type, perhaps. I don't know. But I also think you make a really good point about Frank. He's not even seen a lot of the players yet. So presumably there'll be a lot that he'll want to sort of have a look at first. I mean, I think someone like Manor Solomon is a prime example of that. Yes, someone that probably a lot of fans have maybe forgotten about, having seen him go out on loan last year. But I was under the impression, even before the before Frank was appointed, that he would be given a chance to sort of have another go at Spurs this summer. We'll wait to see how that works out. But he would be an example of someone perhaps that he might want to have a real look at before making a decision on. But one sort of position, I suppose, that we seem to be pretty confident that they're looking at is a winger. Unsurprising, given the way Thomas Frank played at Brentford. And whilst you can't exactly assume everything that he did at Brentford tactically will be replicated at Spurs. I mean, he may look at the squad, it's a bit different, maybe do things slightly differently. But it did seem like, particularly Brian and Bumu's pace, but not just his, Kevin Schaarder out wide, Johan Visser's sort of versatility with those players was a key component in Brentford's success. And when you look at Spurs' wide players, even though there's a lot of talent there, I don't think blistering pace is one of those qualities that they have that much of at the moment. So that's why I'm not surprised that there's a lot of interest in Bumu. It's not just his pace, obviously. He's a quality player, around goal scorer, works really hard. I think at this stage, we're still expecting him more likely to go to Manchester United. I have a suspicion that, you know, the wages on offer there might be more. So I don't know if that comes into it, but we'll wait to see on that one. But the one that really is sort of ramped up in the last few days is Mohamed Kudus of West Ham. The Ghanaian winger who was signed from Ajax for about £37 million a few years ago. So he's not going to come cheap, but it sounds like he may not be quite as expensive or anywhere near as expensive potentially as his £85 million release clause. West Ham are sort of in a situation where, to avoid problems with PSR themselves, they're probably going to need to sell to sort of fund the rebuild that Graham Potter is after. Kudus is obviously a quality player, but it's what we're led to believe that Potter's more open to letting Kudus go than other players, because he obviously, his best position, even though he's a versatile forward, is right wing, which is where Jared Bowen, the captain and the best player, you know, likes playing most. So, you know, when you sort of work it out that way, you can understand why they might be willing to part with such a good player as Mohamed Kudus. And it seems like Spurs may genuinely move for him. And if they were to sign him, he'd be their first signing from West Ham in over a decade. Scott Parker back in 2011 would be the last time they signed someone. Kudus obviously had quite an interesting game at Spurs last season, if that's what we're calling it, last season by now, where he scored the opener, didn't he, in quite an impressive goal. But he also got sent off for having a bit of handbags with the likes of Mickey van der Ven. And Spurs went on to win that game 4-1. But I don't know about you, but I think he's a talent. He would add quality to this squad out wide. I do wonder, you know, it's in the year of AFCON, isn't it? I think this year. So presumably he would be away for a bit. But I guess the same would be for, they signed in Bumu, and they're obviously going to have that issue with Yves Bissouma, if he's still here as well. But you know, I think he'd be a welcome addition. I think Mbeumo would be the sort of dream target. But if they can't get him, I think Kudus is not a bad alternative. What do you reckon?
It's just curious, though, isn't it? Because you say that about Bowen, and that is true at West Ham, but it's kind of also true at Spurs, because they've got Johnson, who we know Frank must, you know, appreciate quite highly, because, you know, they really chased hard for him before Spurs signed him. And, you know, Johnson is a kind of young player with lots of upside that you would imagine Frank might also really enjoy working with. And then they've also got Kulusevski, you know, who obviously we've kind of got used to him playing as more of a central creative midfielder, but also has, you know, very much play on the right also for Spurs in that front three. So it's not a position on the right of the front three that they're, you know, really, really struggling for, is it? I mean, I guess maybe they think, perhaps Frank thinks that Brennan Johnson, you know, the way to kind of unlock what we've said so many times, you know, with Johnson, which is his need for kind of more consistency and that kind of relentlessness, you know, rather than just being a moment player, to sort of have that ability to really go and go and go again, like the best sort of attacking wingers do. Maybe he thinks he needs someone right there breathing down his neck every single week, you know, and perhaps Kudus is that player. I know also that Kudus is a, you know, has versatility, and we know that Spurs and Frank particularly like players who can play in different positions. I also wonder if it's kind of a market opportunity as much as anything, because we know that West Ham need to raise money this summer to give Potter the sort of significant funds that he wants to reshape that squad, and they see Kudus as one of their most marketable players. And I would imagine Spurs, I mean, we know that they quite like getting players who are beneath their market value, you know, and I'd imagine, you know, Kudus in any normal sort of circumstance would probably be a 60, 70 million player. Okay, he's got an 85 million release clause. That seems pretty steep to me. But if Spurs could get him for less than that because West Ham, you know, need the money, if they could get a player who is, what, he's 24 years old, I think, you know, real great age to sign, he's got two or three years left in his contract, can play in different positions, then, you know, it makes a lot of sense kind of financially for the club, you know, and as a sort of an asset to sign. I see less of the kind of real appeal in terms of sort of tactically. I mean, in an ideal situation, you'd love to have a Kudus in there, you know, for competition. I just think Spurs have got more pressing issues to solve than right wing. But do you, I mean, maybe you disagree.
Well, the only thing that I'm wondering is whether Brennan Johnson, we don't know where Thomas Frank wants to play him. Maybe he wants to switch him to the left, potentially. I don't know. But I know, looking back at last season, yes, obviously injuries were absolutely awful at times. And you would hope at the very least that they won't be as bad this season. But there were lots of games, particularly in the winter, where there was such a lack of experienced options off the bench to change things up. And I'm thinking, you know, when they drew 1-1 against Fulham, that game after they beat Man City 4-0, and they just had nothing off the bench to really sort of up the ante, even when they had 11 men versus 10. And that there are quite a few examples of that last season. So any kind of extra sort of experience and tacking quality, I think would be welcome. And you know, you talk about Johnson, he obviously finished top scorer. He was the hero in Bilbao and has a lot of strengths that he can bring to the party. But I don't think technically he's the best player. I think Kudus is a better technician, and so I can see the appeal. And I think, as you say, the versatility of his game will be attractive, and maybe might sort of hint at a few other exits up in those attacking areas. But we might come on to that in a minute. I mean, there's also, I understand, you know, there's interest in Eberechi Eze. He's someone they've looked at for a long time. As you mentioned earlier, it looks like Arsenal might be more likely. It depends where you think Eze plays best, really, because if Frank is to play in a similar style to Brentford, where he likes a number 10, you would think Eze would fit that better. Although whether, you know, leaves a Maddison or a Bergvall, if Bergvall's to play further forward, we'll wait to see as well. Antoine Semenyo is also someone they've considered, but it sounds like his asking price, if reports are correct, of sort of 70 million seem a bit prohibitive. But yeah, I think Kudus is not, as I said before, not a bad alternative to Mbeumo, who would be the number one target if you had your choice. As my dog is barking in the background.
I mean, I think Eze is interesting. We should maybe just talk about him, because I think Spurs fans have probably, you know, really hooked their attention on Eze for a long time, you know, because we know that the club have been interested in him for a while. There's been links for a long time. And I think, you know, Spurs fans were probably kind of dreaming of Eze this summer, weren't they? And I think the idea that we know that, for example, you know, the club are, let's say, backing off that deal at the moment, you know, for whatever reason. And we know that there is this release clause in play where it's, I think, sort of 60 million up, you know, 60 million, and then there's another 8 to be paid at some point. And last year, clubs were put off that because essentially you had to pay the 60 million up front, which is obviously extremely disadvantageous when it comes to kind of PSR rules and things like that. I'm not clear if that installment structure is still in play this summer and whether that is still the reason that Spurs are unlikely to go for Eze, or whether perhaps Tottenham are aware that Arsenal have kind of jumped ahead of them in front of the queue and therefore they don't want to be kind of going up 1v1 against Arsenal, and that is not a battle that they want to be seen to be losing. But either way, I think that was a deal that, you know, maybe Spurs could have been decisive, you know, and gone for and maybe got done. And that would have been a position I think that they maybe were looking at. But it seems like they're pivoting away from Eze towards Kudus for now. And as you say, I mean, I can understand the Semenyo thing. Good player, Semenyo. 70 million seems like a lot for him, right? And I think Semenyo is the kind of player you either believe that all the kind of chances that he misses and puts over the bar one day are going to start flying in and he becomes the next Mo Salah, or you think actually that is, you know, perhaps the sort of limitation that he has. You know, he's always there. He's always in the box. He's always kind of looks the threat. But in terms of sort of being a real clinical player around the box, I don't think he's quite shown that yet. And maybe Bournemouth are slightly overplaying their hand because they know they've already got, you know, the funds in for the likes of Kirkez, Dean Howson. You know, they almost are slightly less in need of being generous than perhaps they were a few weeks ago. You know, they can demand, you know, ridiculous money for players like Semenya when perhaps they wouldn't have done it a few weeks ago. So, I mean, listen, I think Kudus would be a good signing. You know, it's not the need, I don't think, for Spurs, but I think it would be a good signing. He's very good dribbler of the ball. Whenever I've seen Spurs play against West Ham, and I saw West Ham a few times last season, really good ball carrier. You know, in the same way that kind of Kulusevski has that ability to kind of break through pressure and transitions just through sheer strength and speed and closeness of control. And he's a threat around the box. You look at his numbers, you know, I'm looking here, he's got 25 goals and assists in 65 games in the Premier League. So he's going at sort of one goal involvement every three games, essentially. And he's only 24, you know, and he's been in the Premier League, what now, a couple of seasons, I think, you know. So I can see why Tottenham would see a huge upside there. Big fee, but I think it'd be a good signing if they can get it over the line.
Yeah, should we talk a little bit about one of the signings they are, well, I guess it hasn't been completed yet, but we're expecting them to complete in the defender, Kota Takai, if I pronounced that right. He's a Japanese centre-back, expected to cost about £5 million. Which would be a record for a Japanese player signed from the J-League. And by all accounts, he is quite exciting as a prospect. I know maybe fans who are slightly frustrated by the lack of experience signed in the last sort of year or so might sort of roll their eyes at a player who's had no Premier League experience before, who's only 20. But it does sound like maybe they might have pulled off a bit of an exciting signing here. He's someone that came to prominence playing in the Asian equivalent of the Champions League. Actually played against Cristiano Ronaldo's Al Nassr in the semi-final of that competition last season, which his team, Kawasaki Frontale, actually won 3-2. In that game and made the final, losing to Ivan Toney's Al Ahly. But by all accounts, he played pretty well in that game and sort of kept Ronaldo, and I think Mane scored, but John Duran generally at bay. He's 6'4". As I say, he's only 20. He's already got sort of, six caps for Japan. His signing's interesting because while Spurs are always, you know, on the lookout for good young talent, I'm sure if he can sort of capture the imagination of that Japanese market, that will go down nicely as well from a commercial perspective. But they've now suddenly got a lot of centre backs on their sort of roster at the moment. We know there are sort of question marks surrounding Cristiano Romero, and he'll be a big part of this conversation in a minute. But I think it's 8 centre backs now if you count Romero, Van de Ven, Ben Davis, Kevin Danzo, Radu Dragosin, Takai when he comes in, Luka Vucevic, who's, you know, the young exciting young player who they actually signed 18 months ago but only finally arrives at the club this summer, and I might be missing someone else as well. Someone like Ashley Phillips is also available, and there may even be more than that. So suddenly Spurs are pretty well stacked at centre back. What do you think they need to do? Just do, I suppose the question is, should they sell, if they sell Romero, would you be still fully expecting Tottenham to go in and buy another sort of top class centre back to replace him? Or do you think Kevin Danzo coming in last January, Takai, if he's sort of everything he's sort of expected to be, and the fact that he's already expected to be part of the first team squad rather than go out on loan, albeit, you know, you've got to wait to see Thomas Frank to really sort of make his final call on that, you know, across the pre-season. What do you think? Do you suspect that he might not be replaced if he goes, or what?
Well, I guess we have to. I mean, you know, Spurs obviously bid for Mark Gahey in January, didn't they? $45 million, I think it was, they offered, which suggests they were keen at that stage to bring in a, you know, premium central defender. I guess they signed, you know, Danso as well. But you're right. I mean, they are overstacked suddenly in that position, you know, and the club have been keen to insist that Takai is going to be a first team player. You know, he's not one who's been sort of signed for the future. He's going to be loaned out. Equally, when I ask someone, you know, does this suggest that there might be a, you know, a sale of someone like Romero? They were very keen to say that the two things are completely unrelated. You know, that you can't suggest that Takai is a replacement for Christian Romero. But equally, even if he's not a direct replacement, does it mean a kind of shunting up of everyone up the pecking order? You know, I guess equally, Dragusin is injured and is not expected back for a few months. And even with that kind of injury, even when he's back in a few months' time, he will probably then need another couple of months at least to sort of get back up to kind of peak and speed and sharpness. So we should probably discount him, you know, for the kind of foreseeable future. That said, it feels to me like they do have a lot there, you know, and maybe this kind of plays into the sort of idea that Spurs have done before, where they almost kind of sign a collection of young players, regardless of the options they have in their kind of starting lineup, where they kind of group together this kind of like sub group, you know, beneath the first team and the kind of direct replacements for the starters, almost in the hope that, you know, one or two of them make it and that they kind of prove themselves. You know, I think that the Takai signing is almost a bit of a no-brainer. You know, like, you think if you're signing someone for $5 million in the current market, I mean, it really is, you know, next to nothing for a Premier League team to sign an international defender who's 20 years old, you know, who has played, you know, international matches for Japan. In my opinion, it looks on the face of it, and we can't pretend to have watched, you know, Takai at all, or, you know, certainly not every week. It looks on the face of it like a bit of a sort of a, you know, why not kind of signing, you know, because if he proves himself and he catches fire, then you've found an absolute bargain. And if he hasn't, you haven't lost too much. That's kind of where I would put that signing. Even if we're being told he's going to be in the first team squad, I imagine that's sort of the way they're looking at it at the moment.
Mm. I mean, personally, with Romero, I still think if he were to leave, they really do need to replace him. I think he's so influential and he's such a top-class player. You know, I made the case back when he was sort of agitating for a move last season when he did that interview with an Argentine journalist. Was being not exactly subtle about where he'd like to go, citing La Liga as a preferred destination in the future. I sort of made the case that
an interview he organised himself as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's another thing to add into that. I made the case that because of his injury record and the fact that he didn't sound like he really wanted to be there, that if they got the right fee or an acceptable fee, then it might be the right time to move on. He obviously subsequently proved how his quality in helping Spurs win the Europa League. But I don't think I've really changed my opinion on that. And the fact that he's only got 2 years left on his contract, unless he can, you know, convince to sign a new deal, makes me still think the same thing. But with the caveat that they would need to replace him. I, you know, Kevin Danzo has looked like a pretty tidy player since coming in. I think there's been a certain element of not writing off Radu Dragusin from the Spurs fan base, but a sort of expectations definitely going down on someone who had turned down Bayern Munich to join Tottenham when he first signed. But look, he's still very young, despite looking quite old, and is actually relatively inexperienced. He hasn't had loads of game time for his age. And perhaps didn't really suit Postecoglou's style of play. Whereas when I look at Thomas Frank and I look at someone like Nathan Collins, I see, if not a kindred spirit, then a similar kind of player that if Frank plays a similar way, might actually suit Dragosin quite a lot. And I'm sure, you know, from a Spurs hierarchy perspective, they're not sort of ready to sort of give up on him yet. So I can already sense that, you know, maybe they might start looking at those two players as being the eventual replacement with Takai. Personally, given Romero's influence, albeit one that wasn't on the pitch enough last season, I would very much hope they went out and replaced him if they were to sell him, and Gehi would be a perfect player for that. But what is your sort of assessment of the Romero situation at the moment?
I mean, talking to people in the last few days, you know, Atletico's Madrid's interest is very real. I think we expect them to up their interest this week, more talks to kind of continue. I don't think there's been an official bid yet. No kind of formal discussions, but they've definitely sort of resumed informal contacts, let's say. Those reports in Argentina, that 55 million euros, I think, plus 10, you know, we know that they were, the idea that that was accepted, we know is not true. And there will be a ceiling for Atletico. That's the thing, you know, that is my doubt about this deal, is that I wonder if Spurs want the kind of money for Romero that they believe is associated with one of the best defenders in the world. You know, and you look at those fees for Van Dijk, Maguire, Gvardiol, the kind of top five or six fees that defenders have gone for have all been sort of upwards of £70 million, that is. Then Atletico Madrid are going to have to stump up more money than I think they thought they would have to. You know, I think they thought, they were presuming that Romero would be a sort of £40-50 million signing. And they're sort of pushing to their upper end if they're getting to kind of 60. So if Tottenham are going to hold out for a really big fee, then I think there could be an issue there in terms of the club's valuations. And then it'll be interesting to see how Romero reacts to that. You know, we know that Romero next week is due back at Hotspur Way as part of the kind of returning international players cohort. Is he going to behave professionally and properly with regards to Spurs, and, you know, turn up in his tracksuit with his, you know, new pencils all sharpened, and have a, you know, polite sit down chat with Thomas Frank, and, you know, explain that he's very much ready to kind of get going again for pre-season and give his everything for the club? Maybe. But if he starts to sort of, you know, launch some fireworks, then that could also obviously play into the whole situation. I think maybe we should add some context here as well, which is that we know Spurs need money this summer. We know they need to sell players. You know, this isn't a club who have, you know, 200 million just to spend, you know, off the bat. They don't. They need to sell some players to free up some cash to be able to make significant signings this summer. So that is the reality. You know, like, obviously the ideal situation, you'd probably like to keep Christian Romero. But if you actually come down to the point where you say you have to sell two or three players to make, you know, 100 million this summer, and I say to you, well, which players do you want to sell? And ultimately, you would probably have to say, well, look, Romero is one of the players that you can get a big fee for, you know. And when you look at, I mean, for example, I was looking yesterday at a story within the Times, and underneath, you know, a lot of Atletico Madrid supporters basically saying, we don't want Romero for this price. Look at how many injuries he's had in the last couple of seasons. Look at how many times he hasn't played for Tottenham. Look at all the performances, these mistakes, et cetera, et cetera. And I love Romero in certain ways. And I think he, you know, we all know he's a fantastic player at his peak. But I think if you could get a really big offer for him, you know, with all the kind of asterisks that he carries, I think Spurs would be within their rights to consider that. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, the other fascinating sort of dilemma about it is how he has either directly or indirectly kind of called out the hierarchy of the club, and how, you know, can Daniel Levy stomach that, really? I mean, he's obviously a quality player and a very expensive asset, so it might be easier to stomach it than a manager that you who might sort of rail against him, for example. But some of the comments he made were quite eye-catching last season. You know, obviously after the Chelsea game where they lost 4-3 at home, when he got injured again, that quad injury, he obviously gave that impassioned interview where, if I remember rightly, I think it was Pedro Porro was supposed to speak to the foreign broadcast, and Romero ended up stepping in. I can't remember why, but then essentially whether he meant to be quite as blunt towards the ownership or not, I don't know. But essentially, he said that the hierarchy need to learn from previous seasons and especially spend the money like rival City and Chelsea do. If you remember after the Derby defeat against Arsenal, where he was at fault effectively back in September, where he was at fault for the goal that Gabriel scored from a corner, the famous I always win things in my second season game. He retweeted that the same journalist who did that interview with him later on in the season, basically suggesting that the reason he was tired because he hadn't been had a private jet laid on for him coming back from international duty. And there are, you know, and there are a few other things as well. By all accounts, he's a bit of a difficult character to handle. But it's whether you think he's, or whether the club think he's worth it because he's such a good player on his day. But as you point out, he delivered when it came to that cup final in Europe. But there are quite a few examples of his head going, I suppose, with disciplinary issues on the pitch. Remember, he picked up that toe injury that led to the quad injury from a sort of wild foul on Morgan Rodgers in the Villa game. There are other instances as well. So this is why I'm in agreement with you on that one. But they have to replace him if they do.
I mean, his contract, Tom, as well, obviously, is you know, partly an issue. 2027 he is. So
yeah,
it's not a live thing in as much as Bentancur and Bissouma is, and we'll come on to them. But this would be the last summer I think you could get a fee that like the one they're sort of, you know, hoping for, because next summer all the clubs who are interested in Romero will know it's the last summer, you know, that Spurs can get a fee. So they're not going to get 70 million, 65 million, you know, for Romero next summer. So
well, you say that, I'd be inclined to agree with you on that one. But then I look at what Palace did with Mark Guehi, and maybe they'll pay for it, albeit they won the FA Cup in the interim by keeping hold of Guehi when he had 2 years left on his deal. And now he's got a year left on his deal, and they still think they can get a decent fee for him because he'll be so in demand. So maybe Spurs might have a similar mentality when it comes to Romero and not be as sort of desperate as they may have been to sell him now rather than a year's time. But I would say it's quite rare that you know, Spurs let players get into situations that, you know, for sellable players or asset heavy players in terms of the money they could bring in for them, you know, be in a position where they can run down the contracts. You know, Kane was a prime example. I do wonder whether, you know, talk about Romero coming back for pre-season. Obviously, when Kane came back last summer, he instantly told Postecoglou that he wanted to go. In that first chat. So it'll be interesting to see if Thomas Frank has a similar situation with Romero or if he can convince him or if it'll be completely different or not. We'll wait to see. I mean, we talked about the amount of centre-backs they've got going at the moment and the sort of winger position they're looking at. Let's talk about some of the other players who might move on this summer, looking at the squad, because it's quite a big squad, albeit one that's won't feel as bloated as it might have done had they lost that Europa League final, because they've obviously got Champions League football. So they're going to need a lot of these players. But, you know, talking of players who've got a year left on their contract, you know, two big players in the middle of midfield in Bissouma and Bentancur, obviously Sonny out wide. I think Richarlison has still got 2 years left. We know about his situation with his injuries, which have been relentless over the last few years. There's been talk of Galatasaray being interested. And that's before you get onto the likes of Brian Hill, who's coming back again, and the youngsters like Alfie Devine, Ashley Phillips. But out of those sort of big hitters, big names, the ones that will, you know, in our perspective, generate decent lengthy news lines in the paper because people are interested in them. I mean, who would you definitely want to keep, and who do you see moving on, I suppose?
Brian Hill is such a throwback name already. I can't believe that he's still around this summer. You know,
He's the next Bernardo Silva, don't you remember Antonio Conte telling us back at Crystal Palace?
So I feel like we've just been talking about Brian Hill like going on loan to Betis or Sevilla or, you know, Girona or something for the last 20 years. Anyway, I think I mean, Son is the interesting one, isn't it? This is the big one. You know, I think when Frank coming back this week, meeting the kind of, okay, non-international players, so Son will be one of those coming back next week. That would be a big meeting, you know, and I think it feels very sort of reminiscent to me of last year when we were kind of waiting for Ange, when we to kind of have that sit down with, oh, not last year, sorry, 2 years ago with Harry, you know, and there's this idea that, you know, what was Ange going to say? And is he going to have this big speech prepared? And I think he even got asked in the press conference, isn't he, sort of, what are you going to say to Kane? And he kind of backed away from the idea that he had some kind of Churchillian rhetoric ready to persuade Kane to stay. And it's not quite the same, obviously, because Son is not the player that Kane was in terms of his where he is in his career, you know. And I think a lot of people would say that Son is perhaps expendable at this point. But it will be a very interesting conversation, because I think that Frank will be very aware at the moment of letting go, not just in pure numbers, you know, because we have to remember that Spurs need to expand their squad this summer. They have to actually make it deeper and to make it more resilient to the calendar and to the Champions League schedule that's going to hit them next season. So we're talking about Romero and Bissouma and Bentancur and Richarlison and Son and Brian Hill, you know, but they can't let them all go, because they have to, you know, tie some people down and actually strengthen this squad rather than kind of, you know, starting again. And I also think with Son, and this is relevant to Romero as well, in terms of leadership, you know, these are the three vice captains, aren't they? Son, Romero, Maddison. These are the vice captains under Postecoglou. To lose two of them in a summer, you know, would be a pretty big void to fill, I think, in terms of character and influence in the dressing room. So I have to say that I see the arguments for letting Son go, and there are probably some very good financial ones, perhaps, you know, in terms of the offer they might be able to get, you know, particularly from Saudi Arabia. But I just think in terms of kind of keeping the heartbeat of the team, you know, and keeping that sort of, I don't want to sound too trite when you sort of say the connection with the supporters, but I think you have to sort of try and retain some of the experience, you know, and the personality in this squad. And I personally would probably keep Son for that reason. I wouldn't rush him out the door. But we know that Son is more open to leaving Spurs this summer than he's ever been before, you know, and whether that's because he feels like his road is run, whether it's because of the Europa League trophy, whether it's because of Ange, you know, being sacked, maybe it's a combination of all those things. You know, we know that he is open to sort of the idea of leaving, which isn't to say he will, but I think there's definitely a conversation to be had there. And I imagine that's going to become more of a live issue in the next kind of couple of weeks. Where do you sit on the Son debate?
I have to say I go a different way, even though I understand what you're saying and the connection with the supporters, but I do feel like that position, or at least under Ange's style, maybe it would be different under Thomas Frank, but having a sort of top quality wide player is where they're really lacking, and that's what Son definitely was. But I just feel like there's been a big enough sample size in the last couple of years to suggest he's just not quite that player anymore. I would say that he does seem to benefit more when he's playing in a team that sort of dominates other teams, and that's where, rather than being like a Bale, obviously Bale's, you know, almost unique in that season before he went to Real Madrid, but he can sort of conjure something out of nothing. Sonny's not really as much that kind of player. And if Frank can get Spurs back to sort of dominating games in the way that Postecoglou wanted to, but didn't, you know, particularly last season, it didn't really work out, then maybe he could start doing what we have enjoyed watching him do so much for so long. And then also there's the fitness issues that he's had more of in the last season, which have hampered his progress too. But personally, I see it as like the sort of ideal opportunity to bow out on a massive high if the right move comes along. And I would not be surprised, well, at least I'm under the impression, as you say, that he's at least open maybe to that coming about. And I do wonder if this sort of, the fact that they're looking at wingers at the moment, and relatively expensive ones for Tottenham anyway, at that, given the fact they've actually got quite a lot in their squad already, as you mentioned earlier, might be a hint to that being a possibility. So we'll see.
Would you be comfortable with them letting Son and Romero go? Or in your mind, do you think it should be an either or?
Well, just as you were saying that, and about the leadership group, it did make me think about another topic, that if Sonny does go, and if Romero goes as well, I mean, who is going to be the captain? This is a team that's already been criticised from the outside for having a lack of leaders, rightly or wrongly. And, you know, Sonny Postecoglou had a few times where he had to defend his selection of Sonny as the captain, because I think largely because Son has this kind of reputation of being Mr. Nice Guy, which is really not a bad thing. But people often have in their mind this old school Roy King type captain, of which there aren't many anymore. But either way, even if Thomas Frank wants Son to stay as captain, if he is to leave, he's going to have a decision to make. So I'm not really sure who the obvious candidate is for... Yeah, maybe. Yeah, perhaps. But it's funny that Postecoglou never really sort of mentioned him when he talks about leaders. Whenever we speak to Van de Ven, the way he sort of front, and I know we can totally overread, you know, players who actually speak to us in the mix zone, but the way he speaks with authority makes me think he would be an obvious candidate. But Postecoglou never really mentioned him, so I do. But obviously, that's just one person's opinion, or it might not even be his opinion. Just the fact that he never really brought him up, I found quite interesting. But yeah, you were right on that. Yeah, he perhaps would be one of those ones, albeit he's still quite a young player. But yeah, I don't know.
Kulusevski, possibly. Like, I guess I was going to say maybe Kulusevski. It depends, you know, where Frank sees him in the team. But I remember sort of Ange saying how much Kulusevski, and I think he always mentioned Solanke, didn't he, when he was kind of talking about this during the injury crisis, sort of players stepping up and showing leadership. I mean, obviously Vicario is there as well. Yeah, but you're right. There's no one who really sort of stands out as being, you know, this is the guy who will clearly take the armband.
Yeah, I guess they got an issue as well with Kulusevski as just how long he's going to be out for. We still wait to find out how he's getting on with his recovery. But yeah, back to your question about Son and Romero. Yeah, that would be a lot going out the door at once. But I don't know. I wonder if this is almost like a moment in time where they start again. But then they've got Champions League football. I mean, well, it is definitely a tricky one. I mean, just looking at some of those other players we mentioned, in Bentancur was name checked by Thomas Frank in his opening interview, along with like Madison and Solanke. We can again read too much into this, and the ones he didn't mention in a sort of brief interview, it might not have much bearing at all. But the fact that he's sort of spoken to him in quite glowing terms and how to get the best out of him at least suggests that he's in his plans. But I do wonder about that contract, and if it remains unsigned, what might happen to him. But you know, Bentancur is someone that I've always loved as a player. I think, you know, all football fans would really, for he's just so majestic when he's at his best and makes the game look so easy compared to a lot of even other Premier League players with his technical ability, albeit there were moments last season, you know, particularly during that period when they went out to Liverpool and Aston Villa in the Cups and in February, where I think you sort of accused him of sort of hiding in those games when we did the pods back then. And I don't disagree with it at the time. I think he's a better player than what he showed those particular performances. But nonetheless, his talent is elite when he's playing well. So I would hope that they would look to keep hold of him. I suppose, where else? I mean, anything else that you would look at from a squad perspective?
I mean, I just think with Bentancur and Bissouma, they can't really afford to let them go at the moment in terms of like the options they have in there. You know, you can talk about Bentancur being, you know, a bit up and down, and, you know, some of the kind of off-field issues that Spurs had to deal with him last season. The same with Bissouma, to be honest. You know, off-field disciplinary issues and his performances, you know, very inconsistent. But Tottenham need to strengthen in their you know, midfield position. So until they bring in, you know, two or three central midfielders, they can't be looking to sell Bentancur and Bissouma, can they? You know, they have to be finding a sort of a really good number six, which, you know, we think is one of their priority positions this summer. But they haven't got any yet, you know, so until they get one or two in the door, they can't really be thinking about letting them go. I agree the contract situation is key for both of those, because I don't see Spurs letting Bissouma and Bentancur go into the new season without signing a new deal. You know, letting those guys go for free next summer, I think it just doesn't seem to me something the club would allow to happen. So I think the contract talks will be key, and probably the knock-on of that is, you know, the talks with Frank will be key in the next couple of weeks. You know, I think that is one of the things when we talk about the delay being in part down to the change of head coach. Frank has to sit down in a room at Hotspur Way and have a chat with Bentancur and Bissouma and find out where they're at, you know, and those kind of conversations may be key to what happens next. But I mean, you know, you look at other teams, they're doing their business, aren't they, in these areas. You know, look at City, they bought in Reinders. Look at Arsenal, they're signing Zubimendi and Norgaard, you know, in these positions. These are players that, rightly or wrongly, you know, Spurs could be in for, but they're not. And that's why they probably are a few weeks behind some of the teams they're going to be chasing in the Premier League next season.
Yeah, midfield, central midfield is an interesting one, isn't it? Because before, you know, you even considered the contract situations of Bentancur and Bissouma, you already thought central midfield, holding midfield, was a real prime target of where they needed to strengthen. But then when you watch the end of the season and Postecoglou revert to a much more defensive style of play to go on and win the Europa League, suddenly Bissouma looked a different player, playing in a far less risky and aggressive tactical formation and setup. So suddenly he looked more of an asset when you know, just mere weeks before you just presumed he would be out the door in the summer. So you've got the two of them who looked stronger towards the end, and then you've got obviously Bergvall did emerge throughout the season as a talent, but someone like Archie Gray, who they've spent 40 million on, shouldn't be forgotten how much they spent on him, who from a midfield point of view, at least, didn't really show hardly anything last season, or didn't even get that much opportunity to show much either under Postecoglou, who clearly didn't sort of see him, at least at this stage of his career, as sort of good enough to play in that role in the Premier League. And to be fair, when he did, in a few games, albeit in a time when the Premier League had very much well become a sort of lower down the list of priorities, it's not like he sort of ripped the place up in that position. But with a new manager coming in, and one that was looking to sign, or at least the club he was at were looking to sign Archie Gray, so much to the point when he was literally at the club for a medical before he went to Spurs in Brentford. You know, all sort of perspectives can change on all of these players, and suddenly, if all four of those look like they're very much a big part of Tottenham's upcoming future, that can be relied upon. Then suddenly it's not as a problem position, and one that definitely needs strengthening. I'm not saying that's what I think. I still think they really could do with strengthening there. But the point being is, kind of back to the original point of why maybe some stuff hasn't happened yet, is Frank really needs to assess the squad overall, doesn't he?
Yeah, and Archie Gray, I think, is a really interesting one, isn't he? Because, you know, when Spurs signed him, people were extremely excited about what he could do in central midfield. And there were probably some question marks about whether he was going to be a number eight or a number six. But we just didn't really get much information on that last season. I think, you know, Archie Gray definitely sort of furthered his reputation, I think, last season for how he handled playing right back and left back. And during that injury crisis, he was probably Tottenham's best player for those couple of months. But in terms of central midfield, we don't know. And, you know, if he does turn out to be a really exciting, useful addition in that area this season, then it will basically feel like almost like another new signing, because he didn't really get to kind of impact the team there at all last season. So I guess that's a sort of a big question mark, is does Frank see him in that position? What position? Is it number eight or number six? And can he get, you know, Archie Gray to a level where he is really competing and nailing down a sort of a starting place for Spurs, you know, in the Premier League next season? And that's going to be, I think, really exciting to see.
Yeah, and the same has to be said for a number of other young players at the club who, you know, might have been out on loan last season, likes of Alfie Devine, Ashley Phillips, Will Lankshear, Mikey Moore, obviously. You know, maybe none of them, or maybe expect more to be involved, but a lot of those names I mentioned first, they might look to move on or loan out again, but we have to wait and see from Frank's perspective whether he fancies them or what he plans to do in the summer. But that pretty much wraps it up for now. At this stage of the summer where Spurs are sort of slowly getting going, I'm sure we'll do a podcast soon once the players are back and we can learn a bit more about Frank's impact, early impact in pre-season, and hopefully have a new signing to discuss. Thanks for listening.
Cheerio.
Lee. League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.